Hello, it is 2 o'clock, so we are going to go ahead and call our technical coordinating committee to order. First thing on the agenda is the approval of the agenda for today. Does anyone have anything?
Okay. I move to approve. Second.
All right, now that's been moved and seconded, can we get a vote for the approval of today's agenda? Starting at my right, please give your last name and your vote.
Heath Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right, going into our action items, approval of the February 15th TCC meeting minutes. Did anyone have anything on that one? Okay. Can we get a motion to accept?
So moved, Michelle Strickland.
Second, Kayla Brown.
We'll start the vote to my left.
Hicks, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Mains, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right. And then the next item on our agenda is going to be approval of our special called meeting minutes that happened on March 21st. If there's no comments, can I get a motion for this one?
So moved, Michelle Strickland.
Second, Mary Moskowitz.
All right, and we'll start the vote to the right this time.
Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Brooks, yes. Okay. I think that's all the meeting minutes. Okay, and so our next item is going to be adoption of the updated MOU.
Good afternoon. We talked about the MOU at several meetings. The latest updates would be the one we updated the MPO boundary in February, so that is included in Appendix A, or Appendix Exhibit A, which shows the updated boundary. So the scenario one for Bryan County, and then another update is for the formula finalized because we did the poll. So the majority of the members in favor of voting on the Quorum PO board. So that means Chatham County will not pay for the other municipalities within Chatham County. So we did attach the, we did a recalculation for the MPO dues, and which is attached over here. So so you can see the Chatham County will pay about $62,000 instead. Previously, they paid 25% of the municipalities. So this is the final dues structure, so which is attached. And then the other thing is we deleted in the MOU document, we deleted all the references to the Pembroke because that is in northern Bryan County. So all of these updates, you can see we added in the parties, the voting members, we added in the Bryan County because they still have about 13,000 people in Savannah urban area. So they would be a voting member. And then we added in Rincon, Springfield, and Guyton. So part of those, Rincon is totally included in the boundary. Guyton and Springfield partially included, but they will probably share one voting seat because Effingham County is going to pay for all of them. And then we also update the language over here, including the update the language regarding the boundary, just to reflect what has been adopted. We also adopt the MPO director has been, the title for the MPO director has been updated from executive director to executive director and MPO, and finalized the committee, so ACAD and the CEC will be consolidated into the Transportation Equity and Public Involvement Advisory Committee. We make sure that they will be responsible for the public involvement plan, Title VI plan, and environmental justice report.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Is the audio on for the remote attendees? I've got a message. It's low. Can it be turned up?
Like, I'm having just one person having that problem, so I'm not sure if it with their audio problem.
Yeah, Vivian is asking.
Because I'm also connected through my phone, and I'm having a good audio output coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we also formalized the bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee. This is the new committee we're going to establish. And then the bylaws are still need to be like revised and updated or just a double check, but we want to formalize this in MOU. And then also for the NPCs roles, we added in that because previously we didn't have the Title VI plan included, so now we include the Title VI plans, including the limited language assistance plan and environmental justice plan. And then also for the signature entities, we actually added in Rincon, Bryan County, Springfield, and Guyton. So those would be all of the changes we have been made. And then also those signature pages also included all those like Bryan County, Springfield, Guyton, and the Rincon. So those would be all the changes. So any questions on this? We will ask for the last minute added. So because we have presented this to you so many times, so we feel that this document is ready to go. So we want to have the MPO board adopt or execute this. And then after this, and we will forward the MOU to all the member agencies, including our motor representatives and municipalities, and for final execution. So basically we will send you the main document, the fee structure, and then the signature page just for your agency. Any questions on this? Okay, if no questions, we will ask for the TCC endorsement of the updates to the MOU or updated MOU.
Can we get a motion to endorse?
Second.
All right, let's start the vote to the right.
Mains, yes.
Moskowitz, yes. Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Brooks.
Wilson, yes.
Oh, sorry. Brooks, yes.
Thank you. I'm trying to groom Aisha to be the next project manager. So Aisha will do the TIP amendments. So she will be the future TIP manager.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'll just jump right into it. So we received TIP amendment requests from the Georgia Department of Transportation and Chatham County. And we received those requests in March for SR-404 SPUR/US-17 at Back River Project, the SR-26/US-80 at Lazaretto Creek Project, and from Chatham County, we received a TIP amendment request for the Garrard Avenue Improvement Project. Regarding public participation, we did advertise a 15-day public comment period on the Savannah Morning News starting April 7th and ending April 24th. Since the core MPO board meeting has been rescheduled, the public hearing for that will also be rescheduled to May 3rd. So far, we have not received public comment or input on these TIP amendments. Okay, jumping into the meat of it, here were the specific requests. So for SR-404 SPUR/US-17 at Back River, GDOT requested construction funds be increased and also the funding code to be updated. That funding code was updated from Y001 to the funding code Y001 and Y001F. And the construction phase was also requested to be moved from to fiscal year 2026. For SR-26/US-80 at Lazaretto Creek, GDOT requested the funding amount in the right-of-way phase to be increased. And the funding code has been updated to from Z919 to the funding code Z919 and Y240. For the Girard Avenue Improvement Project, Chatham County requested the row phase be moved from fiscal year 2024 to fiscal year 2025. So to compare the TIP project pages, this is the original SR404 spur project, and then this is that new updated project page with the new funding code, the new fiscal year where the funding will occur, and then also a new total fund. Same for Lazaretto Creek, where we have the original TIP page and then the new TIP page that has the new funding code, and then also the new cost estimates. And lastly, we have Girard Avenue, which we have the original project page and then a new project page with the new information. This is just an example of our public involvement materials that we sent to the Savannah Morning News and then also our partners like local libraries to inform the public of this process. And then this is our MTP TIP consistency check. So we wanted to ensure that this was consistent with the 2045 Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And we see that all of the projects were consistent with Mobility 2045. And these are just the original requests by the Georgia Department of Transportation and Chatham County. Are there any questions on the TIP amendments?
All right, seeing as there are no questions, can we get a motion to recommend the TIP amendments as presented?
Brown, I'll make a motion to recommend the TIP amendments. Moskowitz, second.
Great. Can start the vote to the left.
Hicks, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes. Moskowitz, yes.
Mains, yes.
Wilson, yes.
Brooks, yes.
All right. Thank you.
Great. I think that is it for our action items on today. Next, we have other business, and we are looking at selection of projects for grant funding application.
Okay, we did include about 10 projects, 10 unfunded studies in our 2025 Unified Planning Work Program. And the next round of discretionary PL funds is September, so we probably need to submit an application in August. So we actually, Anna and I went to the GAMPO conference, and some of the MPOs, they were like late for resolution or something. So we want to go ahead of the curve. So after we adopt the 2050 MTP in August, so staff might be available to be the project manager for some of these studies. So we want to just ask you which ones of these studies that you want to pursue funding, because we probably cannot pursue funding for all of them. We will probably do 2 to 3 studies based on the staff availability. So if you choose the studies at this meeting, and we will check the scope and then also revise the cost estimate if needed, and then probably have the resolution prepared in June so that we can submit the application in August. So this is, we're just thinking ahead. So these are the studies that we talked about. So the Endercorn PO, we have a regional truck parking study, a resiliency improvement plan, urban flooding model study phase 2, bike pedestrian plan implementation 2. And Chatham County, we have Islands Expressway between Truman Parkway and US 80. FEM County have a US 80 corridor study phase 2. And then CAD has transit-oriented development study, bus stop amenity study, mobility hub study and a program, and bus rapid transit feasibility study. So the funding that we're targeting is discretionary PL funds. So some of that might be eligible, might be used for transit study, but we have the fingers crossed. So right now we just focus on the highway portions of it. We might apply for the resiliency improvement plan under the PROTECT, but we still need the resolution developed for that. So, I mean, what is your recommendation? Because I think bike pedestrian plan implementation too probably will be under Asia Resilience Improvement Plan and the Urban Planning Model Study will probably under ANA. If I do the study, I probably would do the regional track parking study. FEM County probably wants to do the US 80 corridor study too, but MPO has to be the project manager. So just because this is the discretionary PL funds and that the contract will have to come through us. So any ideas, which ones that we need to pursue?
I just know that for us, at least since we basically was adamant about the urban flooding model study phase one, we really need to consider doing phase two. And I say that because after coming back from a national planning conference, resiliency was everything, which is why I mentioned it when we were talking about looking at future costs for things, because we were looking at things we wanted to spend money on. I think we would be remiss not to have something that has a resiliency component as we move forward for the different funding that we want to get for individual agencies that we're pursuing. So I'll throw that out since we've already spent money on phase one, that maybe we could also have some funds spent on phase two so that we continue to apply it, especially to some of the new counties that are now coming into our MPO boundaries that did not get covered under the first swath.
Yeah, I'd agree that, yeah, looking at the urban flood plan and expanding it to the new boundaries would be an important thing for us to focus on. Any other comments on the unfunded studies?
I mean, I think I know what, I think we know which one I will support. but I did have a question with the Islands Expressway one. Is that, right? Is that just for, motor vehicle volumes or is that the study that we were considering for the multi-use path addition?
I
have all of them like running through my brain. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm not sure which multi-use path study you're referencing.
This would be the feasibility for the President Street to Islands Expressway.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of the same segment.
I'll have to relook at that. I don't remember.
Yeah, we do have it included in the UPWP. I'm just to bring up the UPWP.
With the one under Chatham, though, would that one still need to go through the MPO, or would we be allowed to manage that study?
We have to get the MPO's resolution.
Okay.
So supporting our application for funding. So let me see the USAID. Okay. Yeah, Chatham County currently has three already.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to like take a break?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I do want to take a break, so that's why I don't want to do the like truck parking right this year. So I'm just thinking about probably March.
Yes.
Because I do need to take a break.
Yeah, we'll hopefully be moving more into some construction projects next year. So I don't know if we'll really have the staff capability with construction to do additional studies.
Yeah, so.
Just considering the expansion of the port in Hyundai and the inundation that we already see of increased tractor-trailer traffic, I think looking at into regional truck parking options is.
Yeah, but I mean, we can probably just take a break and then do March application. So what I'm talking about right now is like August submittal. And then so that basically if we go through, if we do get the funds, if we apply for the funds and we do get it, the contracting process will take place probably 6 months. So the earliest time that we can start any of these studies probably would be April. And if we submit the application in March, so earliest time we can start probably in September. So I think we, just to think about the staff availability, because like Asia is going to still probably work on the non-motorized transportation plan, and then after August she has to work on the Title VI plan update, participation plan update. So and then she will also take on more responsibility for the TIP. So her hands will be full if she manages this bike pad thing. I mean, it's just pretty hands would be pretty full. So just consider.
I'll have a recommendation for top three.
Huh?
Do y'all have a recommendation for top three?
Yeah, top three. Yes. We don't. I mean, we're asking. Because Melanie just recommended that urban flooding model, phase two. I mean, we can take one of those. Yeah. That one is related to resilience improvement plan. So, I mean, we can choose both or either. I mean.
As I said, it just makes sense for us, since we did the first one, to go through the second phase and also use this as an opportunity to capture the new areas that we have included in the boundary change. It's going to take, you know, it'll take in consideration parts of Bryan County, although they are not fully participating as much as we would like. We still will be able to capture enough information from the impact, as well as, you know, future projects. I know that they're interested in at least participating with us, even if it's at a limited level based on their board's decision to not fully have the whole county included. I just think that we've spent time and resources to do phase one. We really should strongly consider doing phase two.
Okay, I bring up the Islands Expressway between Truman Parkway and US 80. This is the project description.
So yeah, looking at the scope or the project description that's presented there, if we would be able to push a plan for that until next March, I think that would better suit Chatham County.
Yes, I'm going to take a break in between. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's go back to close the.
So when you're going back to pull it up, I know there's other funding sources for the transit planning studies and unlikely to get that, but just our priority would be the mobility hubs if we did go after transit funding.
Okay, let me just open this up again. So do we want to vote a top three so that we can prepare the resolution and then update the scope, update the cost? Because that will involve the amendments to the UPWP as well in June. So we know urban flooding model study phase two is one. Okay. Any other studies that you want to recommend?
I think Kayla said the bike ped.
Yeah, I'll recommend the bike ped implementation tool.
Okay. So that can be, so bike ped committee will be in charge of that. Okay. I don't know. Is Effingham County online? I mean, do they want to do the US 80 corridor study phase two?
Effingham County actually has a representative. I just was out chatting with him, and he doesn't necessarily want to step up with you guys, but
okay,
he's here.
Okay, you need to go over there.
I tried to get him to go over there. He said no.
You need to vote.
He said no.
Okay, does Effingham County want to do the US 80 corridor study phase two?
And as you join us up here, will you please just say your name in the microphone so that it's on the record?
Steve Candler, Director of Development Services, Effingham County.
Thanks. And then Wakota's question about if you guys were interested in the US 80 corridor study phase two.
Yep. So do you want to do?
Yes.
Do you want to do September or March?
March,
okay. Okay, so we have two for September. So urban flooding model phase two and then bike pad. Okay.
So
that's settled, and we will revisit the scope and the cost, and if we need to do UPWP amendments in June, we will do that, and then we will prepare the application and the resolution. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now we are at our status report. So next we have the 2050 MTP update.
Okay, the 2050 MTP update, we are going to talk about because we are at the stage of the financial plan development. So I will just give a presentation and then Anna and Aisha will continue. So for this stage, we are talking about revenues, project selection, and the balance, and the financial balance. And we actually had a meeting in March. We talked about this. And so I would just go over this very, very quickly. So this is the original GDOT revenue estimates that they sent us. They used the 1% inflation rate after 2026. And then now the maintenance, the LMIC funds are not included in the maintenance. And then these numbers are matched. So these are the recommendations that we or decisions that we made at the March meeting. We decided to keep the project maintenance revenue separated. Instead of using 1% that like GDOT suggested, we decided to use 2% annual inflation rate for the revenue projections. And we also decided to replace the 2025, 2026, and 2027 revenues with the TIP numbers and also consideration of the STIP, because the projects from Effingham County and Bryan County will be moved from STIP to TIP because now they are within our boundary. And we also decided for the state and the local funds, we're not going to assume additional state funds, but we're going to assume like $3 million of local funds as in the base year and with the 2% annual inflation rate. So after that meeting, I did the adjustments based on the TIP. As you can see, these are the original TIP numbers. At the top, you can see 2025, 2026, 2027. And we did amendment in February. Oh, that's Chumalini Park Trail, but it's in fiscal year 2024, so it doesn't impact our 2025 plan. But Aisha just talked to you about the three TIP amendments that we made. So for the US 17 bridge, because we are moving the project from 2025 to 2026, you can see there's a cost increase, so that means the revenue will be deducted from 2025 and included in 2026, add that one in. And then the Los Rattle Creek, we just added in about $20,000 in 2024, but I just got the news from GDOT, so we might have further amendments to this project. So when that is done, I will just move the money. So basically, the HIP funds are lapsing. So we have about 308,000 HIP funds lapsing. So we are trying to decide this project actually has HIP funds. And then also the other one is the Chatham County project at 07 on Little Neck Road. So we will talk about that one later. But these are just based on the TIP amendments. And then the Girard Avenue, we are moving from 2024 to 2025, so we're moving the money as well. And then I also double-checked the Bryan County projects. So there are two Bryan County projects. I did check. They are not located within our boundary, so that doesn't impact us. So we're not going to move Bryan County projects into our long-range plan and the TIP. In the STIP, no lump sum specifics are listed for Bryan County, so we're assuming $0. For Effingham County, there are four projects listed in Effingham County. One of them is in 2024, so that wouldn't impact. But the other three actually do have funds listed in 2025, 2026, and 2028. So we will add the revenues from these projects into the revenue projections. And the additional projects, City of Savannah received the grant for the reconnecting communities for the I-16 exit IMR follow-up steps. So we will basically this project comes with its own money. So all these projects come with their own money. So these would be the revenues we consider. So as you can see, the highlighted below over here, these numbers 2025, 2026, 2027, 2028, we replace the original numbers. So, and this is the updated revenue estimates. So you can see we replaced those numbers at the top over here, and then we added the additional revenues, and these are the total highway revenues. And also at the March meeting, TCC agreed with the cost band division. So the cost band one would be 2025 to 2032, and cost band two would be 2023 to 2041, and cost band three would be 2042 to 2050, and the mid-year is 2028 and 2037, 2046. So you can see these are the revenues from the previous table. So you can see this is the total revenues. And the TCC also allocated, and we talked about maintenance, and we would just leave it alone for projects. So we decided to use operational set aside 12%. You agreed with our proposal with using the lump sum a percentage as the basis, so 12%. And transit set aside, we decided previously we were talking about $1 million, so the TCC decided we go with $1.3 million just to cover the electric bus. And for bike pad set aside, we decided we will use mode share. That would give us more money for bike pad projects. Because if we use $1.346 million, we will have less money. So we decided to use the 3%. That's for 2028 to 2050, because we do have specific amounts for projects. We do have projects programmed for in the TIP on bike pad projects. So specific amounts are just for 2025 to 2027. And the rest of the money will be used for the specific highway projects. And we decided not to have the set aside for resiliency set aside. So this is the highway revenue allocation by cost band and a category. So you can see how much money will be available for projects. But I do want to, okay, let me just bring up something. So I try to fit in, so with that the revenue, what the highway project list will look like. So we have decided that the cost band one projects, most of them already in the TIP, will be carried forward in cost band one. So for example, you will see the US 17 Bridge Back River, so the US 17 widening, and the Bull River bridge replacement, Las Redes Creek Bridge replacement, I-16 at State Road 117, and then the Chatham County projects, not Chatham County, Effingham County projects, the Stillwell Road, so added in, and then the Project Durin, we have a right of way included, but construction utility not included in the TIP. I mean, after I add all of this, cost band one projects, the revenue relatively available is about $100 million in cost band one. So that's when we decide to do the project prioritization. So these projects will be included in cost band one, but additional projects. So these are the revenues will be available for additional projects to be included. And then we also decided that we will, instead of having all these like operational improvement projects occupying the project list, so consume that revenue, we decided we'll use the set aside revenue to accommodate these projects. That's including like I-95 ITS project and some of the intersection improvement project I will talk about later. And under the non-motorized, we already have a Chavez Road, Garrard Avenue, and a Green Island Road. But the rest of the revenue would be used for other identified projects. So this is just to tell you what it would look like and how much money would be available for other projects. The next step, we will just go through the project prioritization. I will go through the needs-based prioritization, and I will go through the resiliency-based, and then Asia will go through the equity-based prioritization. So those additional projects will be inserted into those cost bands. So these are the revenues for the highway. For the transit, we decided to use the TIP as the basis to do the estimate. And so the result was that we assumed we would have like $7.5 million each year just for transit capital improvements. But this would be the revenues that would be available in Consort 1, 2, 3 for the transit revenues based on that assumption. But I did check the Bryan County and Effingham County. So in Bryan County, Effingham County, so each year they have about below $500,000 for transit improvements. But my understanding is these funds actually come to the Coastal Regional Commission. They probably just purchase services. So these are really not capital projects. So they purchase, they lease the buses from GDOT and then they purchase the services. So medical services or senior citizens. So really not capital related. So I think we can be safely say that we can assume like zero additional dollars for the transit capital improvements. So I mean, just throw it out over here. Do you have any objections? Or, I mean, Mary might speak more about it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't provide service outside of Chatham County. So, you know, if they are receiving funds, they do go to CRC. I'm not familiar with any capital. I don't think you guys are building like shelters or anything. Yeah, so. So probably makes sense.
Okay. So we will assume no additional transit revenues for this. Okay. Now I will just go to the project selection and prioritization. So what we decided for project selection is we have a big matrix because the cost band one project I have already shown you will be automatically rolled into cost band one to 2050 if it hasn't been implemented. But cost band 2 and cost band 3 projects will go through the matrix, and we do have the matrix. The matrix has about 180 projects. So are we considering a travel demand model, coastal regional, the congestion management process, the freight plan, and then the coastal empire study. And so those would be the four major considerations. And if they satisfy all four, and then it will move forward. And so we also have like sub area studies like US 80 corridor study, Steros 307 corridor study. And if they confirm the project identified in those matrix, and we will move to the second tier. The first tier would be that meets all four of those. We have about 8 projects, 4 of them are capacity projects in the form of intersection improvement projects. Basically, they're operational improvement projects. So I haven't finished checking all 50 projects yet, but the top 50. Just by checking the top 10, seems like a lot of them are operational improvements. So we decided for the project prioritization, probably they will compete against themselves, the operational improvements. So one location compare against the others, and the capital projects will compete against themselves. So they don't compete. You don't compete the capital project against the operational improvement projects. So that's what we're trying to do. So this is the project selection process, and we are in the process of that. And then we select like 50 projects, and we will do the prioritization for those. The highest priority projects will go to cost band one. Remember, we have about $100 million, but I still need to double check all the cost estimates included in existing projects. And then the higher priority go to the cost band two, and the higher priority project will go to band three. And the prioritization, and the first tier is the need screening, and the second tier is the resiliency, and the third tier is equity screening. For the transit projects, we actually have this showed in March, and then CAT actually indicated that we need to add in the para and micro transit maintenance facility. So we added that in. So we will allocate the revenues into these projects for the so CAT probably will do most of this prioritization. So we will see like how much money we will put on these projects for in cost band 1, 2, and 3. So financial plan development, and basically that is just for the funding balance. So just allocate the available revenues to the projects that I have identified. In March, the TCC is okayed with our approach for cost estimating. We use the cost estimating tool. And then we decided for projects, we will use the inflation, annual inflation factor of 4. So on the mid-year to in 2037, the inflation factor is 1.6. And then for cost band 3, the inflation factor, the mid-year is 2046, and the inflation factor is about 2.28. So, and then we also, I haven't received any feedback on the proposed policies for set aside. So it seems like everybody's okay with the language included, but we might want to include some kind of resiliency, like umbrella policy underneath this. So we will have the policy set aside for operational improvements, maintenance, transit, and bike path projects. So the next step is to finish the project prioritization and selection, and then develop the cost estimates for the projects, because the projects, some projects might preliminary might go in cost band 1, but rightfully might go in cost band 2, and construction might go in cost band 3. So that is our next step. Now let me just go to the project prioritization, needs-based prioritization. So, this is based on the selection criteria. So we have about 49 projects or 50 projects that have been selected due to that matrix. So we will just prioritize these 50 projects. And the needs, we will basically use the travel demand model and the freight plan, and then other accepted regional planning sources. And these would be the factors that we would consider level of service, because our travel demand model actually gave us the level of service. We consider level of service E or F to be considered high priority. D and C, I mean, good. We don't think about it. Truck traffic, if it has a lot of truck traffic, it would be like higher consideration. Freight connection and crash rates, if it has high crash rates, it will have higher priority. And if it's on the evacuation route, it will have a higher priority. So these would be the criteria we're going to use under the needs assessment. For the categories, like I said, we don't want to have the intersection improvements or operational improvements to butt head against the capital projects. So they will have a different they will ranked have so basically we will have like two tables. One table shows the capacity project with the scores, and another table shows operational improvements and have their own scores. So we will select based on those two tables. So these actually developed by Genesis. Unfortunately, she cannot make it today. But she's using like level services. She was doing some weighting. So if you have a level service A, B, C, so your prioritization score will be 1. If it's D, so the prioritization score will be 5. If you have like E or F, the prioritization score would be 10. So and eventually we will select all these projects and then fit them into the different cost band. So now I would just, are you okay with this approach just for the needs, need-based? Are you okay with the criteria? Let me just go back to...
Anybody have any questions on it? Your microphone.
Thank you. Looking back, so what if you had, because these are segmented roads, so what if you were on a corridor and had a project and it fell within like two levels of service, or how would you make that determination?
I can show you one example, because this morning I was checking the table that Genesis was generating, and basically the 49 projects. So let's just go to the 49 projects. She did show one example over here. Oh, this one. See this one? I-16 widening, widened I-16 from 4 to 6 lanes between I-95 and State Route 67 in Bullock County. So the way I look at it, I divide this project into 3 projects. So one project is widen I-16 between I-95 and the Puller Parkway, because that project already has a PI number. So that means it's more advanced. So it might have a preliminary engineering already program in the GDOT program. And then I divide the second project from Puller Parkway to Bryan County and Effingham County line, because that is within our cornfield boundary. So we prioritize that one. And then the third segment would be a westward, like between Bryan County line all the way to Bullock County. And that is not none of my business, because because Bryan County decided they don't want to join us, right? So I'm not going to consider that project. So basically, the reason I divide the line, also one reason is because the segment between I-95 and the Puller have a PI number, also because it has a level of service F. And then the segment between Puller Parkway to the FM County line has a level of service E. So it is a lower priority. And then the other one I don't consider. So we would just divide this up. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, we would just Anna will do the resiliency portion of it.
Hi, good afternoon. Anna McQuarrie, MPC MPO staff. All right, so I'm going to be talking about the resilience chapter and section in the MTP. So Wycota gave a great overview, and I'm going to talk about how resilience is inserted into the various sections that she's gone over. In the financial plan, I'm going to talk a little bit about the greenhouse gas rule update from FHWA and then the project prioritization, which was the last thing she covered. So just want to remind everyone, what is resilience? A capability to anticipate, prepare for, respond to, and recover from significant multi-hazard threats with minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. All right. So I know when I think of resilience, I'm typically thinking of those natural hazards. So think increased temperature, flooding, sea level rise. However, that also... We also need to think about man-made hazards. So these could be resilience, you know, that ability to bounce back from infrastructure failures, cybersecurity threats, terrorism, active shooters, hazardous materials. So all of these things, you know, we want to be resilient to natural and man-made hazards. So just this is kind of an example. We can think of it as flooding on roads. And then this is a picture of the Francis Key Bridge. So if you're familiar, I feel like most people in this room probably are, we had a bridge collapse over a container ship, and that bridge is going to be down for a very long time. And so even thinking about, you know, we have quite a bit of port activity here. We want to become resilient to those man-made threats too. All right, so how does resilience fit into our MTP goals and objectives, mainly in the safety and security and system and environmental preservation goals? And so a couple of different objectives of these are, we want to improve emergency response and incident clearance times. We want to increase the resiliency of infrastructure risks, helping prepare for, respond to, and recover from emergencies, including extreme weather and environmental conditions. Reduce flooding on roadways. We want to meet industry, state, and national standards for infrastructure and asset quality, condition, and performance for all public transportation and transit infrastructure. We want to support transportation maintenance. We want to reduce emissions and energy consumption, increase application of green infrastructure, reduce stormwater impacts of surface transportation, and maintain and improve existing roads and facilities. So how exactly are we incorporating resilience into the 2050 MTP? So in highway funds, we had potentially talked about a resiliency contingency percent. Today I'd like to talk to you about including an umbrella resiliency policy to be included in all other category policies. So we have policy statements for maintenance, operational, transit, and bike ped. At our previous meeting in March, the TCC special meeting, TCC voted to not include resilience as a separate policy. So this umbrella policy, which we'll get into in just a minute, it would essentially cover all of these other existing ones. So kind of inserting resilience into those other sections, not keeping it separate, which is really, you know, I think a better idea anyways, because we want resilience to be embedded in all of these processes. Some transit funds, thinking about electric vehicle infrastructure and ITS. So what are the economic benefits of resilience measures? Why do we want to think about including costs for resilience, reduction in the cost of repairs, reduction in user costs, and reduction in regional economic losses to any events that could occur? And so just as a review, what are policy statements? These are developed for category projects to correspond to project revenue category expenditure set-asides and maintenance expenditures, TCC-approved operational improvements, transit, and non-motorized set-asides in our special meeting in March. All right, so what would an umbrella resilience set-aside policy look like? This would be a statement that applies to all other categories. The language being the project considers solutions to address natural and man-made hazards as part of resilience measures that result in minimum damage to social well-being, the economy, and the environment. See, this is very similar to that FHWA definition that I stated at the beginning of the presentation. So some examples, in operations and maintenance, you know, think of life cycle of materials, redundancy to avoid supply chain disruption in bike and ped. We're reducing greenhouse gas emissions, green infrastructure to protect bike paths from flooding. Transit, reducing greenhouse gas emissions through these, reduction of single occupant vehicles. So thinking about, you know, resilience is really embedded in all of these things. What are other people doing? How are they including costs for resilience? So the Florida DOT had a great report on the current state of the practice for Florida MPOs in 2022, and there were four MPOs that do have money set aside specifically for resilience. Sarasota and Manatee, they developed a $75 million boxed fund to address flooding and protect critical infrastructure. So funding will be available for projects identified in their upcoming resiliency and vulnerability study. North Florida TPO put aside funding for a resilience program to identify mitigation measures or design changes. Hillsboro TPO developed an investment program for vulnerability reduction, so like stormwater and drainage. And then $1.5 billion was allocated towards vulnerability reduction for the period of 2026 to 2045. Space Coast MPO, in their long-range transportation plan, they used three security strategies to ensure the capacity necessary for large-scale evacuation was in place in the event of a disaster, those being prevention and protection, redundancy, and recovery. And so in this report, many people noted, many participants from Florida MPOs really did state the need for a dedicated source of resiliency funds or discretionary funding sources that could be beneficial to conducting various activities. And so I think by having this umbrella policy statement, you know, we are kind of committing to having resilience embedded in these projects here in the core MPO. Before I move on, does anyone have any questions about the policy set aside? Is this something that you all would like to have us consider including as opposed to the separate policy set aside?
I guess my question is just, is there like a specific amount that you would desire for the set aside or how that piece of it would work?
Probably would not have a dedicated amount for that, but for when we do the cost estimating, we might consider like 5%, 6% contingency cost.
Okay. And then I guess the other thing of it, it still seems like the how you're defining resilience in specific projects, like I guess it still seems very open, which I guess is broad on purpose, but I guess I just am still very curious as to what you'll actually be looking for in projects to qualify for the resiliency set-aside.
Right. I think some of that could be clarified once the resiliency chapter is finished. It has specific sections on greenhouse gas emission reduction, green infrastructure, stormwater improvements. It'll have information on biodiversity and wildlife corridors. And then it has information from existing plans and studies in the area that contribute to this as well. So I think that resilience chapter will identify more specifics and be a little bit more well-rounded there to help give you a better picture.
Does anybody else have any questions? Okay.
All right. Just wanted to give you all an update on the FHWA greenhouse gas rule update. So at this time, MPOs are not required to submit targets and reports. And this is because 22 states filed lawsuits challenging the rule. And so FHWA agreed to temporarily not seek enforcement of the February 1st deadline for states to submit initial targets until March 29th. On March 27th, the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas vacated and remanded the final rule to DOT, in effect nullifying it nationwide. So at this time, states and MPOs are not required to submit initial targets and reports. FHWA will provide more information at a later date. So we had originally anticipated having a reductions plan set this to be due this summer, but right now that's on hold. Right. And then project prioritization. So this feeds into the last part of YCOTA's presentation. And so we have that tier one of needs, tier two being sustainability and resilience. So how are we going to do this? So we'll have a vulnerability score. As I've mentioned in previous meetings, we're utilizing the Federal Highway Vulnerability Assessment Scoring Tool, or VAST, for a composite score. This considers exposure, sensitivity, adaptive capacity. FHWA breaks up resiliency into these three factors, so it's not something we made up. This is pretty standard. And so we have an assessment team determining the inputs, which I have mentioned in previous meetings. And so this will include things like evacuation routes, road redundancy as well. So just to walk you through an example of, you know, if something is an evacuation route or not, I had two different projects that I think maybe were mentioned in Genesis's needs presentation. So the I-95 auxiliary lanes, no. And then that gateway interchange, yes. So we have a little circle here. You can see if it's an evacuation route or not. Road redundancy, is there another road you can take potentially? So for I-95, you can maybe take Highway 17 if something happens. And then this is really the meat and potatoes here is VAST. This is just an example. These are some screenshots from a tool as an example. And so again, this is just looking at the exposure, to climate stressors. So we're considering temperature, precipitation, sea level rise, storm surge, and wind. And then these indicators are things that, we look to describe the impact of those. So change in total number of days a year above 95 degrees, change in annual maximum temperatures, 5-day average, location in a FEMA 100-year flood zone, change in number of consecutive days with precipitation, change in total annual precipitation, modeled sea level rise, inundation, depth, elevation. We even looked at proximity to coastline, modeled storm surge, inundation depth, and observed wind speed records. So it's really cool. You can put in all your different projects here and then record your information, and then you can weight the scores within each category. So I have just some examples from temperature and precipitation. These all then add up to a composite score, which are then added in with the sensitivity and adaptive capacity indicators. We just had a meeting yesterday with the assessment team to talk about those last two sections. So this tool is a macro Excel sheet. Essentially, it does all the calculations for you. Again, it was developed by FHWA. It'll spit out a score and tell us, you know, which of these projects are ranked most vulnerable to least. Right. And that is all I have for you today. So any questions?
All right. Doesn't look like there's any questions, but thank you so much, Anna. Great, thank you. Is there anything else on the 2050 MTP update, or are we moving to?
It's just doing the upgrading.
Okay.
In the third tier of training.
Okay.
I will be try to do this quick. Okay, let me zoom out just a bit. So in addition to resilience, we're also looking at equity within the 2050 MTP. And just to quickly go through a definition of what equity is from a federal standpoint and a transportation standpoint, the federal government defines equity as the consistent and systematic fair, just, and impartial treatment of all individuals. And equitable development aims to meet the needs of all communities and community members. US DOT defines equity in transportation as in seeking fairness and mobility and accessibility to meet the needs of all community members. And even within transportation, things like the Title VI plan and then also our environmental justice plan, our language assistance plan, also kind of aligns with a lot of what we're doing with equity. So to move on to, I guess, what I define equity as from an individual standpoint is that equity is distinct from equality in that it heavily considers historical, societal, and individual context in decision making. And so we want a transportation system that looks a little bit more like the bottom picture, where it considers the idea that different people have different needs, and so our infrastructure system should reflect that, over the kind of the top image where it's kind of a one size fits all, when we know that society is not one size fits all. So why include equity in transportation? And it's just because we have a duty to create a transportation system that is helpful and accessible to all travelers and residents. So we want to avoid a transportation system that looks like the two images below, where it can be hostile to people that are outside of a car, or hostile to people that have a disability, or hostile to people within a community because the transportation system might split that community. And so a transportation system is only equitable if it is safe, useful, and offers connections for all people. And also, I just wanted to show that it's not impossible to create a more equitable transportation system. We see places like New Jersey that have implemented a Vision Zero plan and have been successful in that. So it's not just this far-off dream. It is possible. And then also I wanted to acknowledge the city of Savannah's ramp removal study. So we see that the ball is rolling on equity. We're getting there. And so the core MPO is also dipping its toe in creating a more equitable transportation system from the planning and funding standpoint. So how is equity being incorporated into the 2050 MTP? So it is being incorporated through the goals and objectives of safety and security, also through our non-motorized transportation plan and our public involvement through surveys and public meetings. We also have equity measures within our 2050 MTP highway projects, such as prioritizing projects that improve equity. Additionally, we devote highway funds to transit development. We also have a transit set-aside. We're also devoting highway funds to bike, pedestrian, and trail projects. And then we also have a bike and pedestrian set aside. And then also pursuing transit investments that create transit, bike, and pedestrian connections. So moving on to kind of the meat of this presentation, we're also incorporating equity through our project prioritization process. And so I'm going to show just kind of a framework of what that prioritization process looks like. So within this framework, it will prioritize bike and pedestrian access, projects improving connectivity by connecting to vital resources will be considered more equitable under that system, and then projects that improve safety and have protective features will also be considered more equitable. So the basic idea is to promote projects that are helpful for all types of travel, whether it be by car, bike, or foot, and acknowledge and develop the multiple ways that a person may travel. We also based our decisions on what to include in this prioritization process based on what is easily available, like what types of data can we get our hands on relatively quickly to add to this process. So, with that being said, Transit connection and accessibility is one of the criteria we would like to use. So under this system, projects that have bike and pedestrian improvements and are also near transit will be considered more equitable than projects that don't have those improvements and aren't near transit, because it doesn't create transit connection. And a justification for that is that the data is easily available. We can get that very quickly. And then also many people who use transit do not own a car. So we want to prioritize that those projects that give people that option for travel without a car. For bike and pedestrian connection and accessibility, so we want to devote more points to highway projects that have bike and pedestrian improvements, and especially if they're in close proximity to bike and pedestrian infrastructure. And then also if those projects with bike and pedestrian infrastructure are also intersecting with places that have high levels of zero car households. And then the justification for that is that the data is also easily available. And then projects with bike and pedestrian improvements will increase transportation accessibility for the general public, but especially for those who do not own a personal vehicle or do not have access to a personal vehicle. Okay, so connection to critical facilities. Within this one, if this project is creating connections or improving connections to places like hospitals, grocery stores, libraries, and schools, those will have a higher score than projects that aren't creating those kinds of connections. And the justification for that is that, again, this data is available, and these facilities provide services for wellness, and they are beneficial to the community. In terms of Title VI and environmental justice, we also wanted to include information on poverty. So within this system, highway projects that have bike and pedestrian improvements and also intersect with census tracts with high levels of poverty would be scored higher. And that is just to address transportation cost burden, in which even if you do own a vehicle, it might be a huge cost burden. So this can also give you the option to not have to rely on something that cost burdens you. Additionally, this data is also easily available. Lastly, is the safety component. So this one's short, but it's just, does the project have a median? Justification for that is that research shows that medians really reduce pedestrian crashes and it makes streets safer. The safety component is a bit small, but that's just because a lot of the projects within the 2050 MTP don't have super detailed project descriptions. And so this is just based on what we do know about the projects. And then it's important to note that interstate projects don't necessarily improve access, connectivity, and safety for all people, and that historically interstate projects have divided communities and negatively impacted communities and surrounding traffic conditions, especially for vulnerable road users. And so interstate projects will receive an equity score of 0 within this framework. So an example of what this would look like, this is an image of the 2050 MTP projects, and then the blue dots are schools. And they also have a buffer around them. So they have a quarter mile buffer around them and a half mile buffer around them and then a mile buffer around them. So within the scoring and screening process, the projects that intersect with those buffers will receive a higher score than those that aren't creating access to places like schools or hospitals. And this is just one example within the scoring criteria. So additional methods to incorporate equity in the planning process also involves just communicating and sharing data. So we have a ton of new data sources, such as the US.etc. And these equity resources could be incorporated at the beginning of project suggestion. And so while assessing the equity of a given project is helpful, what is more powerful is identifying areas experiencing great inequities and creating projects that address those specific inequities from the very beginning. And so the core MPO can help with that process because we have a lot of access to really great equity data. So if any organization is interested in injecting more equity into their transportation planning, into their transportation development, core MPO is happy to have a conversation and share all of the data that we have available. And just to show some of the equity data sources, a lot of them are accessible through the U.S. Department of Transportation and FHWA, but they include Justice 40, the U.S. ETC Explorer, Census and American Community Survey data is great, CGIC, Coastal Georgia Indicators Coalition is great. Also, FHWA Proven Safety Countermeasures is a really great list of different infrastructure developments that improve safety for all road users. And then AARP Livable Communities has great data on how to create communities that are livable for all people. It's specifically about age-friendly communities, but I think it can apply to basically anyone. And with that, are there any questions or comments? All right.
Thank you so much, Asia. I think, is that the last piece on the 2050 MTP?
Yes.
I'm not going to give the presentation, but just want to let you know that want to show you the map of the projects that we're going to evaluate. So these would be the projects that we're going to evaluate based on the needs, resiliency, and equity. So let the staff do the internal score, and then we probably will schedule a special call to TCC meeting probably in May. When we have the scores to show you, and then we can talk about the project list. So just want to let you know.
Thank you. Sounds good. All right. And then the congestion management process update.
Okay. I received the draft 3.0 congestion management process yesterday. So I'll just do a quick overview. So basically, Genesis was updating the congestion management process using some new data sources, and then we will just show you the finding locations, some mitigation resolutions. So we actually, these are the data sources she was using, like Georgia Crash Data, GEARS, BTS, Census Bureau, GDOT, and NPM RDS, and Tremble Demand Model. So this is the data that we received from GDOT. Remember last time GDOT actually gave a presentation on the travel demand model. They showed us the base year and the 2050 year do nothing model. And now they completed the model 3 existing plus committed. That means the existing project and also those projects under construction or have construction programmed. And then STEEP model. So this is the basis for the congestion management. So you can see the level service. We accept the level service A, B, C, D. So we don't accept the level service E and F. So you can see where the congested locations are. So this is the basis to identify the congestion locations. The most congested locations you have identified over here. As US 17, I mean, that's no wonder Chatham County is doing US 17 corridor study. So you can see the segments just based on this. And then 307, Puller Parkway, Victory Drive, US 80 Brampton Road. Actually, Brampton Road, I think this one probably, because we already have a Brampton Road connector. So it might be existing. We have to double check on that one. But we should have a project already addressing that. And State Route 204. Epcorn Street, and these are the segments, and Stewart 21, Durant Avenue, Stewart 144, I-95, I-16. So basically all of the Euro suspects. We have to like double check to see, why in 2050. So we already have like projects and why they're still shown over here. This is from the congestion management process, and we identified the projects. But some of those already have projects to address those. So these are the locations. And then when we identify the congested locations, how do we mitigate the congestions? So these are some of the just the general strategies. So you can just do HOA lanes or variable speed limit or whatever. So these are just the general mitigation strategies for the congestion management. So regarding each of those, identify the locations, so we have to see what specific measures will be applicable from these criteria that we select. So basically, these are the findings which are included in the congestion management report. And if you're interested, you can just take a look at that report, and it actually includes all this information. So since since Janice is not here, so I really cannot answer some of the questions. But if you do have questions, just forward it to me, and I will just forward it to Janice to address.
Thank you, Wakoda.
Okay.
I think next we have the Namodash Transportation Plan status report.
Okay, I will run through this one again. Here's the attachment. Okay. So the non-motorized transportation plan is a document that addresses the development of bike and pedestrian infrastructure in the core MPO area. And the goal of this plan is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. We're being optimistic about this timeline, but we're still aiming to adopt this in June 2024. But with everything going on with the Metropolitan Transportation Plan update, there is a possibility that it'll be pushed back further than that. In terms of the main updates for this plan, staff hosted a steering committee meeting on April 10th to discuss equity within the 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, and then also the bike and pedestrian plan scoring methodology. The final document is in the process of being drafted to include a lot of the data and research and input that we've received on this plan. Additionally, cost estimations have been updated for the projects in the 2014 version of the plan. And the scoring methodology has been developed, but still open to tweaks. So about the scoring methodology, which would be the meat of this presentation, most of the data came from the Department of Transportation, but we also got data from SAGIS and Strava and New Metric as well. And Strava Metro is just not on this presentation. So how is that data being used? So we got a lot of really good geographic information letting us know the census tracts that are experiencing things such as high levels of transportation cost burden, poverty, high volume road proximity, and much, much more. We also have community data that shows us the location of schools and grocery stores, and also crash points. So where are bike and pedestrian accidents happening within the area? So this data will be used by overlaying bike and pedestrian projects over this geographic data to determine if the projects are serving the needs of a given area. So just an example of what I explained before, this map is a map of drive time to points of interest in minutes. The shorter the drive time, the darker the color will be. And these kind of white lines are the new bike and pedestrian projects. So using the data mentioned, we can prioritize projects that intersect with census tracts that have a shorter drive time to points of interest, so those darker purple tracks. So within this scoring prioritization methodology, the projects that intersect with this dark purple will receive a higher score than those that aren't going through those darker purple areas. This is just an example of the scoring matrix that we reviewed with the Non-Motorized Transportation Plan Steering Committee. And so we're including factors such as crash incidents, speed limit, traffic volumes, schools, functional classification. Additionally, public transit, zero-car households, transportation cost burden, those will also be used. And additionally, we're looking at drive time to points of interest, Where are people commuting and how are they commuting? As in, are they commuting by walking, biking, or using public transit? Bike and pedestrian volumes and the existing bike and pedestrian network. And I have this highlighted because it's going to be moved to a new factor. It's a connectivity factor, which will ensure that these projects are creating meaningful connections that fill gaps, and they create connections to critical facilities. And then these are bonus points. This is pretty much staying the same, or has stayed the same. So connections to Title I schools, and then if the project is a protected facility, it will receive a higher score than projects that aren't a protected facility. So the cost estimations of the 2014 projects were completed by Genesis, and she used this tool to complete that. Just to give more information on that, the new cost estimates rely on an inflation rate of 2% and have a default construction year of 2026. Any projects that cannot have their costs estimated via the tool were grown linearly using a 2% growth rate. The county by default is Fulton County, given that the ARC tool has only the Atlanta area's counties available as an option, but these projects are Savannah area projects. And all areas were set as urban. No right-of-way was used in any project calculations. Lastly, the total costs include preliminary engineering, construction, and contingency. And that is the end of this presentation. Are there any questions?
Can subdivision sidewalk networks that are connected be included in that?
So the non-motorized transportation plan can include local roads. I'm correct, right?
Yeah, but subdivision within a subdivision plan.
Oh, but if they're connected all together, the purposes as they come in.
I believe that
would. I just didn't know if it would include.
Yeah, so bike projects, sidewalk projects, any type of connectivity project that is a bike or pedestrian connectivity project would probably fit into the non-motorized transportation plan. It specifically prioritizes projects that create not just like a trail in the middle of a forest or one that's like kind of far off that not all people can use. It's one that prioritizes connections to places. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the current priority is to kind of fill out that regional prioritized network and then build those, kind of ribs off of that spine. But yeah, I agree. I think, you know, in terms of if it's connecting those subdivisions to a job center or to, you know, a future bus stop or to a, you know, grocery store or something like that, that would be given higher priority.
Thank you for your question.
Any other questions for Asia on the non-motorized transportation plan?
We use the 4% just like the 2015
plan. 4% increase rate for like 2%. No, I'm just asking the question because it seems like based on Truman Linear Park Trail project, that's increased like more than double, right? The cost estimate. So, I mean, should we just assume 4%, then 2% for the cost estimating?
Have it at 3 in the MTP or?
Yeah, for the MTP, for the 25th MTP, we're using 4% for annual growth rate for the cost to increase.
Well, yeah, I think if we decided on that for the 2050, it would be good to be consistent.
Yeah, no, I think that would make sense to have it be consistent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also somewhat concerned that the cost estimation doesn't include right-of-way. I feel like for a lot of the bike and ped improvements, that's going to be a big, like, cost.
Yeah, the right-of-way.
Yeah, but especially because we're trying to do network connectivity, so it's along existing roadways and things like that. So, I mean, I understand that the tool didn't really address that well, but I don't know. That's just something I would maybe want to consider.
Okay. Maybe it could be a percentage set aside for right-of-way that could be included if the project needs it. Because some of the projects, either would be on existing right-of-way or it would be more cost effective versus, you know, to purchase an empty field versus to purchase part of somebody's front lawn.
Yeah.
So, and also depending on where it is within the county.
I was going to say too, and what the funding source is, because I mean, if you're looking to get federal dollars and you're asking for right away, that's going to be kind of, especially for a bike ped project.
Yeah.
So we would think about probably boost up the costs probably. Yeah. But for the 2050 MTP consideration, we will probably focus on the regional bike path projects. And so we will focus on the cost estimating for those first.
Okay, thanks. Are there any other questions? All right, I think up next is the MPO boundary updates.
Okay, why do I say that follow up? Because if you attended the Cornfield board meeting, you remember a lot of the board members, they still want to give Bryan County a chance to join the Quorum PO. So they were asking whether we can do the boundary update between census. And my instinct is no, I really don't want to do that because it's already dragging for 2 years. And it's pretty hard because we have to update the boundary, we have to update the MOU, we have to update the bylaws, and then all of the plans. If we revise the boundary, all of the plans, like UPWP, MTP, non-motorized transportation plan, freight, TIP, all have to be updated. So we want to say no, but unfortunately, this is the answer that come from FHWA. And they say, they basically say that we can. We can update this, but in some kind of agreement. Let me just see. For some reason, I didn't include the letter from FHWA. Basically, they were telling us, yes, you can do the boundary update between census, but per each census that is required, but between census you can do it. But for now, we don't want to delay our plan adoption. So we will, even if now Bryan County wants to join, we will say no. I would say at least, before we adopt 2050 MTP, we will say no. So that is just a update. And then for the bylaws, we talked about having individual meetings with the different committees, to revise their portion of the bylaws, but it's just we were so swamped, so we were not able to get to it. So hopefully in May, after we have this draft of financially constrained 2050 plan, we can work on that. But I just want to let you know that I did update the bylaws a little bit. For one thing, I updated the boundary portion of it because we adopted the boundary. So I updated the boundary portion of it. And also for the Compute Board, we added in the election. Because that is associated with the MOU, the fee structure. So we added in the election portion of it. And then also who's going to be elected. So only the elected officials will be, election. I added in this only elected officials eligible for positions for the chairman, and the vice chairman, appointed officials or designees are not eligible. So because this is one of the comments we received, so I did add in this. This is for the Compio board. For the TCC portion of it, I really don't see that many changes except that I deleted myself because I'm the staff member. So Melanie will still be the voting member on the TCC. So because currently we have two voting members, so MPC director and the Cornfield director are both voting members, but I think I'm more of a staff member. So I deleted myself out of this. And then Town of Thunderbolt, Wittenberg, they probably don't have staff members. So I removed that and remove Wittenberg into the advisory committees and added in the Bryan County representative. And then also added in a staff representative from the Effingham County, because Effingham County currently have one seat, but they are going to have another seat because that will be rotating between Rincon, Springfield, and Guyton. So I added one, at least give them one at the TCC. And then also I moved the Coastal Regional Commission into the advisory because they previously they were not a TCC voting member, but they had a very enthusiastic planning director who wanted to join the TCC, so that's why we amended the bylaws to add that person in. But after he left that agency, nobody participated from CRC. So, but we still coordinated with them. So we would like to just add them into the non-voting member. And then the other change that I made is, we previously, we see like no business may be conducted by the TCC unless a quorum is present. So I changed that to no action items may be conducted because, I mean, we can still do status report, informational reports. So these are the things. And then previously all the committees have different quorum requirements. So I changed that language to be consistent. So it'd be 1/3 of all members plus one just to be consistent. So these are all the changes I made to the TCC, but I don't see TCC have that many changes on the bylaws portion of it. But you can just, after this meeting, just go over it, and we will probably still have to have a meeting, separate meeting, just to talk about this. So this is just a status report. Any questions?
No. Thank you, Akoto.
Okay.
And then roadway functional classification update.
Okay. The roadway functional classification, I did talk last time because we, City of Savannah wants to up-classify Benton Boulevard. So we asked the GDOT what needs to be done. They sent us the form. But it's like, okay, what is the timeline for this? Previously, when we adopt adjusted urban area, the next step is to update the functional classification. The GDOT will send us the form so that we can fill out the form. But seems like now they changed. So it's like you can, the local governments can request to do this. So they are not going to have that process. So they're going to have like a statewide process. So this is the answer, that I got. Governments and POs are free to make FC requests at any time. If you're within the MPO, so just go through the MPO. So the MPO will coordinate with GDOT. But so far we haven't received the formal request from, because you're supposed to send us the, like supporting documentation. Cause I know City of Savannah wants to do Benton Boulevard. Thunderbolt wants to do one of the roads, Savannah State, but I haven't received any other request. I haven't received any official request, but seems like GDOT is not giving us a specific deadline, so we can do any time. So we can work on this probably after 2050 MTP adoption. So let's just focus on what is the most important. The only thing that might impact the 2050 MTP is in Bryan County, but depending on whether we will have those priority projects. One is Harris Trail. I think another one, the two roadways, those are local roadways. So probably they wouldn't be eligible for 2050 MTP. That might be the only impacts. For now, my plan is just to focus on this probably after August because the 2050 MTP takes precedence.
Any questions on the functional classification changes? All right, moving into information reports. Do we have anybody for GDOT?
Is Katie on? Katie, are you on? Just muted. Katie, can you unmute yourself?
Do you want to go ahead and go down the list then?
Okay. Yeah, she provided the report.
Okay.
Attached.
I don't have anything for Chatham County outside of what was presented on the status report. Does anybody have any questions about any Chatham projects?
I have a question about one of these, the top one, I-16 at Jim Deloge Parkway interchange.
Yes.
Because we do have HIP funds. I got the notice from GDOT that the HIP funds are lapsing. The HIP funds will lapse September 30th of this year. So we need to authorize the funds now. So are you ready to get the funds authorized? I mean, are you ready? Because I think you have the right of way.
I submitted that when I submitted the Garrard request, and I thought that we needed to move the right of way for I-16 at Jimmy DeLoach, and I was told they were already moved. So we might need to look at that, because I asked about that when I submitted for Garrard.
No, this is the Jimmy DeLoach. This is the HIP funds.
Yeah, but you said it's the right of way?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to ask about it when I submitted the last one. We can talk about it.
Okay, so.
Because, yeah, I think the right-of-way on something is for this year, and I don't know that they're going to hit it because they got to do that value engineering study, and so that's kind of.
Okay, so right-of-way is not going to make it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to, okay. So we're trying to figure out with GDOT how to reallocate the lapsing HIP funds, about $308,000, because I think it's the Bull River or La Strada Creek. That one also have HIP funds. It's not going to make it. So we're trying to identify projects to reallocate the funds. So you might, I just want to let you know that you might lose that funds for this project.
Anything else for Chatham? Up next, we've got City of Savannah.
And I don't have anything additional to include other than what was submitted in the update, unless anybody has questions about my answer.
Okay.
Savannah Hilton Head Airport.
Yeah, we have two projects that are currently under construction, the security checkpoint expansion. We're expanding our security checkout lane by two lanes. That's looking to be completed at fall towards the winter of this year. And the second project is our fuel farm storage expansion project. We're expanding by 120,000 gallons, which is three 40,000 gallon storage containers. And that's going to be completed probably spring of next year.
Okay, I do have a question for Savannah Airport, because we did include stay route I-95 at Airways Avenue project in the 2045 MTP, and we did have like scoping phase in our TIP, and the funds have been authorized, and GDOT took over that project. So I think that project will be carried over to 2050 MTP. I just want to know, where are we now for that project?
I don't have any update at the moment on that. I think we're looking at our master plan update, and that'll probably be included in that.
Are we going to have any right of way, or are you going to donate right of way for that project? So because of when we do the cost estimating, we need to find out, are we going to have the right of way cost or construction cost for that?
I can follow up with you on that.
Okay.
I'm not sure at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Chatham Area Transit.
Thanks. To update you on the Savannah Bells Ferry project, that's going to require a TIP amendment, so you all will see that in June. I think
we'll do it in the June
meeting. And then other than that, there are no updates to the written report. I will just make an announcement that we started our SMART grant micro transit project on April 1st. That's not a joke. We really did. And I used it to get here today. So if you guys want to save on parking fees, you can use that. It's just a short 2-block walk to the stop. So are there any questions?
No. Awesome, though. Okay. Congrats. Up next, I imagine LATS SCDOT report is included.
Yeah, LATS is not having April meeting, so they said they will provide updates in June.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the TIP funding tracking report.
TIP funding, Karen has been coordinating with the project sponsors, and she got the updates, and she updated that table, actually.
Okay. Is there anything else? Any public comments? All right, so we are at our notices. I just wanted to give a reminder LMIG funds, the supplemental LMIG that has a 0% match, the deadline for that is June 15th. So.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. For the Gamble presentation, I just want to mention that Anna did an excellent job. So Anna and I went to the Gamble conference and she did an excellent job of that. Another thing that she's going to follow up is this FLAP program. Because basically one of the MPOs gave a presentation. So that's the federal land. So they actually applied for the federal land for the local road maintenance. So basically this is because normally the FHWA and the FTA funds go through the MPO process. We don't receive funds for this like federal land program. But they were actually applying for that funds and they were using that for that. That can be supplemented to LMIG. So Anna is going to like follow up on that one. So the good thing is the competition is basically zero. So you don't have competition. So, but we just have to identify which roadways in our region, access roadways to the federal land. For example, like for Pulaski, so something like that. So we will follow up on that with you. And also the grant, this is another funding source from the EPA that I added in this EPA grant information. And this is for, the charging stations in the port. So the port, the Port Authority and the state DOT are eligible applicants. So this might be another funding source that we might be able to tap into. So I forward this information to the port and the GDOT just to make sure. So it seems like we can explore additional funding sources. No.
Awesome. Is there anything else? All right, we thank you all for being here today. Our next TCC meeting, it sounds like we're going to have a special call TCC meeting sometime in May.
In May, probably, yeah.
For the 2050 project prioritization. And then our next regular TCC meeting will be June 20th.
Yeah, and also for those of you who are going to attend the Corn Pio board meeting, we already mentioned it's like rescheduled to May the 3rd, yeah, because the Senate is coming next week. Okay, thank you.